Relationships rule. That's my motto. I'm Janice Porter, and I love to share the power of relationship marketing to help grow and impact business. I've grown my business by building and nurturing relationships, and I'd like to help you do the same. Welcome to the Relationships Rule podcast, where connection means everything. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Relationships Rule. Today, my guest is Caroline Stokes, who actually lives in Vancouver like me. It's so cool when that happens. So first of all, welcome to the show, Caroline.
Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. I know that you are the author of a book that came out around just before COVID or just around COVID called Elephants Before Unicorns, Emotionally Intelligent Strategies to Save Your Company. I love the title. I want to hear more about that. And Caroline is a certified executive leadership coach for leaders who demand impact within themselves, their teams, their product, and their organization for a better, more sustainable business environment and world. And that's very succinct, but there's a lot packed in there, I'm sure, because I do know that integrate, I think, into maybe a holistic approach, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you integrate your coaching approach with neuroscience, psychology, and business strategies, and they all become part of what you do with people. So talk to me about that, because that means you've either been to school a lot, a long time, and you know how to synthesize things all together. So it's pretty impressive.
Well, that's very sweet of you. Thank you so much. So in terms of synthesizing, you're 100% right. And it all comes from doing a lot at a very young age. And I was very, very interested in it at a very young age about how organizations worked in the environment, business studies. And I studied at a very young age in my teens before then working at Virgin and then working at Sony, all before I was 21 years of age. So I was very interested in marketing, sales, product development, new technology, all of these different things. And when you're sitting with marketing or PR as your primary function at very early on in your career, you have to look very quickly at all of the different systems that impact you from being successful. And it's not very straightforward when you first start out in the job, but it's because you're learning rapidly and you're having to adapt and see all of the different systems, internal systems, external systems, team systems, all of the different dynamics that can impact success. And it's, you know, it's a lifetime experiment. Mm-hmm. But I can absolutely say that everything that you just said in terms of the synthesis of it is all about a lifetime journey of learning and practicing and being able to work with the people that really resonate with what kind of impact you want to be able to make, which is usually in the technology, digital, mobile, online, cybersecurity, AI environment.
Yeah, that's where you've hung out most of your career, correct? Yeah.
Absolutely. But, you know, it's also working with people that might be HR people in that kind of environment. Yeah. It's going to be salespeople, business development, producers, project managers, technology people, and they're going to be either executives, leaders of the organization, business development people. It's going to be entrepreneurs, all of these different people that have to make an impact. And it's all connected. Everything is connected. And that sounds like a movie tagline, but everything is connected. You've got to make those conversations happen. You've got to enable the relationships to work well. You've got to identify the systems to be able to then, you know, charge forward with a vision and move that forward.
So when you come, I'm assuming you come into a company at the top level, usually, because if you're starting at the top, then it helps for everything to siphon down. I imagine that if you're working with an executive in a company and you see, what if you see that he or she is the problem? How does that work?
We're all the problem. Because we have our inner voice. We have the way we work. Without that self-awareness, often, usually, we're unable to know how we're going to impact the solution or how we impact any aspect of the work that we do. And it's back to the relationships, it's back to the conversations, it's back to those, you know, dynamics. Everyone is a problem, and this is why even Tiger Woods has a coach. You know, he gets in his own way. He'll have his own
time. He gets in,
right?
Yeah. I'm surprised he picked him as a, like, are you a golfer?
I'm not a golfer, but the point is that he's been repeatedly successful.
You
know, even when he had his ultimate low, he has demonstrated that he can be repeatedly successful, not just based on talent, but to be able to move forward in a way. And every entrepreneur and CEO or business leader or director or manager, they've all got exactly the same problems, which is how do they present, how do they show up? How do they actually find the solutions to the problems that they need to solve?
This might be sort of a side piece over here, but it just made me think of something that happened with my daughter. She's in a new company. She's been there about 4 or 5 months, and she's senior customer account manager for Canada or something. Anyway, she has a new boss. Nobody's in an office. They're all over everywhere, and which I find really hard. It must be so hard. Anyway, she's going to a conference in London, England, and that's big for her. And she's a single mom, and of course we have to babysit. That's the other side of the story, but she phoned me this morning and she said, would it be okay if I go on Sunday instead of Monday? Like, she booked the plane to go already because her boss said, go Monday. You're going to get there first thing Tuesday morning. If you're on time, if you're late, don't worry if you miss the beginning of it. Well, she's been stressing all week because she stresses about anything to do with work. And she didn't want to show up. What if I'm late? And I don't want to be late. It's my first time, right? So, Mom, can I go the day before? Would that impact you? And I said, it's fine. So you could see her come, you know, calm down a little bit. But what kind of advice, you know, is that to an employee from the VP of whatever, of people, that it's okay to do that? When, what are you teaching them? Like, she went with her gut on that one. She said, I even paid the difference for the change of the flight because I can't do it.
Well, it sounds like she has a great sense of responsibility to ensure that she is there, she's present, she's able to work well within the organization, show up early, be prepared, be alert, be present, and do what she needs to do. I think when the VP is that relaxed, I mean, that sounds very generous somebody to say, look, don't worry about it, arrive when you arrive. And sometimes leaders will do that when they think they're asking too much of that particular person. So it's almost, it can be seen as a sign of generosity, but it's also, it can put pressure on somebody that has a little bit of anxiety. They may have I'm not saying your daughter has this, but she may have a sense of perfectionism. Which means that she really wants to make sure that she is present. She's buttoned up. She wants to ensure that she does her best work. It's also quite anxiety inducing to just rush off a plane and run to a meeting. So it's like, I think she's doing the right thing. She's managing herself really, really well to ensure that she shows up in a productive way.
I just wondered from the, you know, the idea of the VP's position, and you're saying, because I don't know this person and she doesn't know her that well. Anyway, I just thought that was interesting because there's so many responsibilities and pressures on the employee rising, climbing the corporate ladder. And then there's also the pressure of the, you know, the new director or VP or whatever having to do what's right, because you're right. It's all about people. It's all about relationships. And you don't really, if you don't really know people that well, and you're new to your position, you have to take the time, right, to build those bridges and build those relationships. A lot to do. So you come in as an outside pair of eyes, yes, to a company. Yes. Or do you work specifically with privately with people, then you're not coming into the company, which is, or is it?
I do everything. So I'll work as a as an executive coach. I'll work with leadership, their development, their growth, be able to consult with them specifically on, you know, how they need to evolve within the organization, how they need to solve communication, strategic issues, collaboration challenges, all of the different things that are required basically to get to that end goal. Mm-hmm. And I work with individuals who will reach out to me and say, I've got to do this. I've got challenges in my company. I'm not able to perform particularly well on this particular area. Can I work with you for a couple of sessions to identify how I need to move forward? Or it can be for a much longer engagement. It really does depend on the individual, the organization, what kind of challenges they have, and of course, what kind of budgets they have. Everybody, you know, it's not a one size fit all because I'm an independent consultant. I also have various other people that I work with as business, in terms of I have business partners internationally, which enables me to come in and kind of parachute in and work with clients for a couple of years or, you know, whatever the situation is, very flexible. And that's when you're an entrepreneur, which I regard myself as being able to do. I've written books, I've contributed to books. I've had a podcast, I've had various different business streams over the years. I consider myself an entrepreneur, and it's really important to be open to different types of clients, different types of revenue streams, because I know it's fun. It's fun, and you learn so much.
Of course. So what took you from being in corporate yourself to going out on your own?
A couple of things. The first thing that happened when I went out on my own before I became a coach was I had a baby. So this is 21 years ago. I had a baby, but previous to that, I had set up companies in different parts of the world. I had been in Europe, I should say. And I'd also been an executive producer of a digital company in Australia. I'd done all sorts of things. So just bringing all of those different skills together to kind of feel the market, what was necessary. And what kept happening for me is people kept thinking, oh, we're going to hire Caroline to be our PR person. And I'd be thinking, are you serious? I haven't launched anything since the PlayStation, or I had. But, you know, they kept thinking, because of my brand back in 1995, that I was still a PR person launching the PlayStation for Sony. And I would scrunch up my face and, you know, very frustrated, thinking, no, but I do all of these things as well. So from a branding perspective, I wasn't doing a great job. People just kept assuming I could do whatever I did for PlayStation, you can do for us. And I had a very interesting career. When I moved to Canada, Vancouver specifically, I worked in a PR company, set it up in North America, or should I say Canada, and worked with all sorts of different companies. And that was a lot of fun. But the fundamental thing at that particular point in time, which was 20 years ago, that fundamental point of the moment in time is that whenever companies hired us, the PR agency, I should say, they were trying to solve a problem that actually they should be solving internally, which was to identify what the product needed to do in the market and to do it succinctly, to ensure that the communications and the anticipation for what needed to happen was handled effectively. And that if they were trying to use a PR agency to do a hiring drive, it's like, well, make sure that your internal systems are correct in the first place. And what I mean by correct is really about, well, how do you communicate your vision? How do you make everybody or help everybody get on board with that? How do you ensure that all of those working systems are productive? And how do you ensure that people feel like they're engaged and, you know, you can retain them for the long haul? And how do they handle their interview? How do they handle their interviews? How do they onboard, et cetera? So that's what my book did. And at that time, when I was transitioning, I thought the solution was going to be, you just need to hire the right people. So I then became a headhunter. So I was a headhunter for a good 5 years or so. I can't remember exactly how long. It seemed like such a long time ago. But it was 10 years plus ago. And I was headhunting, we're doing executive searches, I would do CEO searches, executive producer searches, CTO searches, all sorts of searches in new technology, And by the way, I loved it, but I could still see the problems being the number one problem, I should say, starting again, is that organizations internally weren't getting their systems right before they decided to hire, because organizations move at such a pace. Nobody stopped to think, what's the strategy? What's the vision? How do we need to sort our internal systems, our communication systems, so we can move forward? So that's why I wrote Elephants Before Unicorns, Emotionally Intelligent Strategies to Save Your Company. Because if you aren't aware of the elephants in the room of your organization across everything, especially with people, how on earth are you supposed to move forward? And today, organizations and people within organizations, especially successful organizations, are doing really well. I mean, they're so much more advanced than how they were 5 years ago, even 2 years ago. But people don't stop to take a moment to identify how far they've come, where they are now, and then where they need to go next, and what needs to adapt. So I kind of parachute in with people at various stages of their leadership journey or their career journey to support them. And I love what I do.
I can tell for sure. And I did notice in some of my reading about you that you seem to be ahead of the curve. You were ahead of the curve with AI. You were talking about it way before it was on my radar. And I'm, you know, I try to keep up, but I'm not, you know, I don't have any real reason to be. I'm not an early adopter usually either, whereas you might be. And I suppose you were talking about the AI component and how it was going to change so much back when you did your TEDx talk, but probably before that, I'm guessing. Was it part of your book? Because
it is part of my book. It's chapter 18, and it's a very short chapter. It's really about getting the human factor within the organization sorted out so it can adapt to the AI age. And as you've probably noticed in the past year, when ChatGPT suddenly, you know, became, you know, front and center of everybody's conversation, it created two different responses. First one is that the, you know, people are absolutely petrified that it's going to take their jobs, that they're not connected to it. So one of the reasons, one of the things I did last year in August 23 was do MIT's course on AI for business strategy, specifically because I thought, you know, I could read and read and read. I need to really do a 6-week fast track course on all of the different aspects on how an organization can adapt and implement AI solutions without it, you know, and to humanizing it and making it a tool and beneficial to any aspect of the business, any business system, whether it's human or whether it's automation, whether it's processing, finance, you name it. So it was very beneficial because earlier in 23, as you'll know, everybody was on the bandwagon thinking, oh, this is amazing. I was quoted in Fast Company specifically in January of last year because there was so much noise about AI. And I was like, hold on a second. There are dark forces about that can potentially change the narrative, add to the narrative and create truth that may be not necessarily true. And people are very good at identifying or jumping on a particular bandwagon. So I think I was the only one being cautious at that time and being a bit of a killjoy. And then later on, it's like, okay, I mean, I know what I know, but I need to know more and I need to learn. So my point being is that even when I wrote an article last year about loneliness and the pandemic that we have, or the endemic loneliness pandemic that we now have, partially down to remote work that we have, the fact that we live in very, very different times, it's really up to us to learn as much as we can and to challenge ourselves as much as we can to learning and to just jumping on board with something, whether or not it's going to the library for a couple of hours and picking something up and developing new dopamine hits in our mind, our brain, which is just so yummy, that if we do that and we learn, we push ourselves out of our comfort zone. Yeah, it's a little bit uncomfortable. You know, I have put myself in an MIT course every year so far. I don't know if I'm going to do one this year, but whenever I do it, It's so uncomfortable at the time, juggling work while doing a course. But the benefits are you see the world through a different lens, and you're able to, number one, contribute more effectively to, contribute to the conversation more effectively when you're having conversations with people. And secondly, the fear factor that engulfs a lot of us, it comes through avoidance, not wanting to talk about it, having a very fixed viewpoint on something that kind of feels a bit outdated. Can prevent people from moving up and growing. So being able to adapt more within the environment and society that is currently being built, formed. And we all may as well be part of the solution rather than just kind of sitting and drifting down, down
the
river.
You're not the majority, though. I mean, I get it. I'm a lifelong learner. I'm right in there. Learn about things and maybe just baby steps sometimes, but I can use ChatGPT. I've used it. I can see some value in it. I can see the dangers in it. I can have that conversation with people, but I hear people saying, oh my God, no, I'm never going to do that. You know, it's going to take me out of my job or, you know, whatever. And they don't take the time. That's the majority of people, I think. Fear takes over.
Yeah, it's the fear, the amygdala hijack on this is pretty significant because we're unable to see really how it's impacting us. So, you know, we talk about what's happening in the cloud and basically there's technology things happening. It's not like going to a Facebook page where you can kind of see there's a familiar human aspect to it. And there's the connectivity and there's the relationships and there's the communications. This feels kind of surreal that all of these algorithms are happening without our knowledge, and it can feel quite unnerving. So and it's understandable why people feel this way. So it's unfortunately, and this is why I write about it in my book, I wrote it in 2018. It takes time for book publishers to get it through the system because of the editing time that it takes and so on and so forth. But it came out in September 2019 and just 6 months before COVID hit. And what happened then was that people were thinking, no, AI, what are you talking about? It's like, we've come such a long way in 5 years or however long 2019 was. But even then, it's like, you can't keep up with it. So
yeah. It's so good.
We need to, as I write in that chapter, it's like just being open to learning and trying to see what the trends are is going to be really important for everybody because we need to know. And sometimes I'm often surprised. So for example, you know, when you open up your, I don't know if you have Netflix or Disney Plus or whatever you have.
I've got them all.
Excellent. So I have a very interesting relationship with those subscriptions because I'll go to a friend's house and I will see that they can tell that he will have or they will have or she will have a different algorithm based on what she watches or he watches compared to me. And I'll look at what they've got on their Netflix and I'll just say, I can't watch anything that you've got there. It's too violent or it's too sinister or it's too much horror. I can't watch it. And that's why when you go into, let's say you go into your husband's profile or you go into your daughter's profile, you'll see that the algorithm is completely different. And that's just algorithm. Yeah. It's trying to identify what you watch, trying to identify the preferences, you know, so on and so on and so on. That's the same thing. And it happens everywhere. You know, whenever you pick up your cell phone, mobile phone, you go onto Facebook or you go onto X / Twitter, whatever it is, it identifies your actions will create that particular type of output. And I'm not going to get into the machine learning language or anything like that. That this is just me paraphrasing it so we can understand it. And I'm not a technical person.
If you've been listening to me for a while, you probably know that I love to talk about LinkedIn. So now I'm curious, are you ready to take your LinkedIn to the next level? Because if you are, I've got the perfect opportunity for you. As a valued podcast listener, I'm offering you a 1-month free trial to the LinkedIn Advantage program. It's your chance to join the community of like-minded professionals and immerse yourself in a space designed for learning, networking, and growing your business, and a lot of LinkedIn as well. Don't miss out. If you're ready to go from listener to participant, take advantage of this free trial by visiting podcastadvantage.janiceporter.com today. That's podcastadvantage.janiceporter.com. Join us and we'll see you in the group.
But yeah, I mean, it's everywhere.
I know.
It's hugely transformative. And actually, I'll add one more thing. So the person that did the foreword of my book, his name is Darrell West, and he was the author of The Future of Work, Robots, AI, and Automation. And because he could see the benefit of, as humans, us developing our emotional intelligence, so we're able to adapt to this new way of working, of living. Mm-hmm. And there are people like Elon Musk, and I don't know whether or not to agree with him, but I'm observing and cautiously nodding, which is that in years to come, we will have so much free time for, I don't know, let's call it leisure pursuits. And if that is the reality, how do we get there? We can't just suddenly retire.
No.
We can't just suddenly semi-retire. What are the systems that need to happen around that to make it happen? And I'm pretty sure that the financial institutions, that the government institutions will catch up with that. But you've got people like Elon Musk that are visionaries, that are obviously that thinking in different ways and can see the future far more than most of us to be able to say, well, this is where we're going to go. We have to adjust our environmental, societal, governance aspects of the way that we live and work, so we're able to adapt to that. But it's a million miles from where we are right now.
Absolutely, and it'll take forever, especially with the governments and the bureaucratic systems, because they take the longest. School systems takes the longest before anything happens. I noticed on your face on your LinkedIn that today is a special day. That the Harvard Business Review Guide to Navigating the Toxic Workplace is launching today. Is that the word launching today?
Yeah, it came out today, 16th of January,
yeah, so
2024.
Tell me
Well, first of all, thank you for bringing it up. I am so excited about it because it's not every day you get a co-authored chapter in a Harvard Business Review guidebook. So it's my first. It'll probably be my last. I know that doesn't sound very positive, but it's just such a, this is a moment in time, this conversation that we're having, and I just can't, I'm just so thrilled. It's like, oh my gosh. But I have to say a huge thanks to Lou Miller at Preslova and Ron Carucci, that they were leading this particular article, and I got on board with it. And the chapter is available online as well. If you Google Harvard Business Review Toxic Workplace and Bullying, and the article that was turned into a chapter in the book, bullying is something that we all face in organizations, whether it's covert or overt, and whether or not you're male, female, young, old, whatever the situation is. And the person, Ludmilla Preslova, she's one of the smartest people I've ever come across, and she's so brainy. She came up with this concept paradigm or system that was also published in Harvard Business Review. She's got a book coming out called The Canary Code. So she is able to look at all of the systems and put it into practice. So bullying was a very important aspect. So you've got, usually you expect bullying to come from the top. The top down, but there's different types of bullying. There's bullying, there's peer related bullying, there's also bullying that comes from below, yes, to the manager level, which you just don't think that could possibly happen. So the chapter focuses on how to manage that, and the book itself, I don't actually know who the other authors are that contributed to the book, because there's bound to be at least 25 chapters in it. But and I haven't received the book yet. It's arriving by Amazon before 10 o'clock tonight. But when I and I'll then know the actual fact. But the great thing about it is that toxic workplaces happen. And when I hear people say, oh, that person is toxic, or this environment is toxic, what does it really mean when there is a toxic environment? And usually it's because people don't communicate particularly well. There may be conflicting vision. There may be conflicting ways of working. There may not be understanding. There may not be any that will enable growth and what have you to create that kind of harmony. There could be jealousy. There could be narcissism. There could be all sorts of a myriad of things.
The Peter principle.
It's really hard. So to identify. So this book will help people navigate whether or not you're the boss, and you need to be able to see what the systems are within the organization to be able to prevent it or create a better environment. Also for the person that is just trying to work out what language they should use if they do identify that they're in a particularly toxic situation or an environment.
That I was talking about earlier, she was in a situation that she was being bullied at work in two jobs ago, but it was really difficult to hear and to watch, and because she wasn't outgoing. She's very introverted, and she's very, you know, it'll all go inside, and it was hard for a long time with that. And this guy was just a lunatic, so I don't know. Anyway, so it's still happening a lot in the workplace. This is exciting for you that this is coming out today. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I might have to seek it out and see what you have to say. What was I going to say? There was something else. Because I read something. Oh, no, just that. I just think that the kind of, like, that's just a piece, right, that takes, that mm-hmm. would be a consideration in what you're doing when you work with mm-hmm. organization. And there's another piece that I think I read something about that I'm sure is, well, I thought it wasn't so prevalent anymore, but it must be more so. And that is a diversity workplace. Is it still a major issue? Is it more so in the US than here? Is it more so here than in the UK? Or is it pretty universal?
Well, diversity is a really big topic, and it's become political. Mm-hmm. So it's a tough one to tackle in the few minutes that we have left. But what I will say is that I would encourage people to look around their office environment, or if they're a remote first organization, look at your Zoom rooms and try and understand, with the power of empathy, trying to understand where those people, what their backgrounds are, where they came from, what do they bring, what beliefs might they have, how does one listen to all of these different perspectives, and how do all of these perspectives create a better system or a solution that is necessary for the product or the service that is being created and served for the organization. That's my bottom line there.
Okay. This is an aside, but it made me think of it because I've been noticing this lately. So you mentioned Netflix and Disney and all of that. So we do watch Netflix, and we do watch, husband and I, we do watch a lot of the British shows, the dramas, the police dramas and things like that. I'm from England, and I just love listening to those accents. And I just, their way of creating those shows is very different than the US way.
Oh yeah.
Very different. But one thing I notice in a lot of those British shows is, well, number one, they're never as pretty. The people are never as pretty as they are.
Less Botox.
Yes, yes. And they're much more real. But they also very, very often, if not every time, have somebody in the cast who is either what's the term? They're either physically disabled, or they're in a wheelchair, or there's some kind of diverse.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's one person usually every time. Mm-hmm. You don't see that in the US productions.
No, I mean, you've got the movie Coda that,
right?
There's also Champions. Woody Harrelson was in that.
Oh, yeah.
So very good.
Yeah.
Oh, it's superb. It's absolutely superb. And it's, I can't speak to the film industry, but I think Hollywood is Hollywood.
Yeah.
And I think they're only just beginning to branch out, because independent films, independent movies, independent filmmakers would have probably gone down that path. And it looks like, you know, Hollywood is diversifying themselves in that.
But if you don't notice it the same way that I've noticed it in those British productions.
In Britain, you've got, it's such a melting pot of different cultures, different everything that they at 100%. And the level of content that comes out of the UK is just phenomenal. So yeah, that is very British, and they've always been at the forefront from an entertainment perspective, compared to the gloss of Hollywood.
Yes. Yeah. There's some great actors that come. Yeah, a lot of fun. I'm guessing, if I said to you, reading, video, audio, which is mm-hmm. your favorite way of entertainment and learning?
Oh, right now reading is my thing. And I have two book recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, one. The one that I just read is probably, I talk about systems a lot, and being able to see through the systems and understand how the world works is what drives me. I just love it. It's, you know, it's how some people like detective movies. I'm the detective. I like to be the detective of working out what the systems are within an organization and how people are able to move forward. So books, and the book that I want to recommend is Underground Empire, How America Weaponized the World Economy. It's by Newman and Farrell. And it's very tech, but it provides the insights as to how wars happened, how 9/11 happened, all of these different aspects, and the technological leaps and challenges that came from all of those different events. And it's just, I don't know, I just felt like I had my mouth agog most of the time.
Was well, now, okay, so you are definitely a green, I think, maybe.
Okay.
I don't know, like you're the analyst, you're the things, like that you like to see how things work and whatever. Mm-hmm. And yet I find you very easy to talk to in the sense that you are a people person too. That's mm-hmm. That's lovely that you have both. It really is, because there are some people that are very tech or leaning that can't have a conversation about anything, you know?
Well, I think because, I mean, I'm not a programmer.
No,
I don't have that power at all.
PR side of things, right? You were in the PR side of things. You were in the marketing side. So that's where that comes from. I love it. So what does 2024 look like for you? What's the goal?
Well, I've started writing book two. I won't tell you what that's about. I know that sounds really like the terrible way to bring something up and then not say anything else, but I've started writing it, and I've told my book publisher, I said, I'm going to get a manuscript to you by spring. So that's as far as I can go. I do have some family trips booked, but it's that and the business that I'm doing with my clients. That's pretty much it. Doing a book is insane. Yeah, it's an insane piece of work.
What you were doing the first time? Are you a person who has to plan every day to write a certain amount, or do you have to put a week aside and go away by yourself or a cabin, or, you know?
I wish that's how I was most inspired when I was in London last November for Thinkers 50. And I was so inspired. Every felt like every time I turned, whether I was at an art gallery or whether or not I was in a Starbucks of all places, you hear conversations, you look at things, and it's just like, oh my gosh, that's the opening to my book. So
exciting.
To answer your question, no, I'm not one of those really diligent PhD people that will outline everything and, you know, and then they get to work. No, I'm very much a feeler and a listener and an observer of what's happening in the moment. And then I'm able to piece together where things need to go, which is frustrating because when my first book came out, I was frustrated because the book came out and I'm like, but the world has changed. The world has changed.
Oh, wow. Yes, and it had, hadn't it? So, wow. I feel as though, I know one other thing I wanted to ask you, and then I'm going to wrap it up. So you did I have to share this because when you shared it with me offline, I thought it was really interesting. So you did a TEDx talk in association. And I watched the TEDx talk and I went, well, this doesn't look like a normal TEDx, like, or, you know, there's no red dot in the middle, there's no dark stage and all of that. And you shared with me why. And I'm like, oh, I don't think I've met anybody else who's done a TED talk that's had this experience. So please share what happened.
So the morning of the TED talk, there was a flood in the hotel. So they had to move everything into a conference room. And they moved the technology there, then the technology didn't work. And the video camera was put in different places. And it just wasn't set up how it was supposed to be set up. And the person that was managing and who was the person responsible, or the people that were responsible for it, the director and the project manager, they said, well, the essence was the show must go on. Yes. We're doing this. And when the technology didn't work, I needed the technology to work. And I just felt like I choked, because when you expect the technology to be there as you're, you know, and you've been practicing and practicing and you know when you're doing your next slide, all of a sudden I didn't have it there. And it was one of the hardest things that I ever did, but I was very grateful for the support of the team to be able to do it.
I just watched another TED talk as well that a friend of mine did, and it was on fear. And because that's her whole thing, fear in the workplace, fear and whatever. Mm. And I could tell she was nervous doing it actually, but she did a good job and she got her points across, but she had the slide thing in her hand, like, you know, too. And I mean, it's not been a desire of mine ever to do that because I know I can see how much work it takes to do it well. And you did it well. It just seems so weird to me that it was in, you know, that it was the way it was set up. So now I know why. And I appreciate you sharing that story. Thank you. And thank you for being here today. I would like to ask you one last question before you go. And that is, to get your take on my favorite word, curiosity. So I'm a very curious person, and I would like to know whether you believe that whether curiosity is innate or learned, and what are you most curious about today? We may have answered that already, but just as a...
Is it innate? Is curiosity innate or learned? I think it's both, depending on the person and their background. A lot of us are expected to be experts in things. So if our ego self is impacted with the idea that we are not the expert, we may not feel compelled to ask the question. Mm. And questions are basically the art of curiosity. So I feel that for some people, they are naturally curious. They're going to be the artists. They're going to be the people that are trying to look through all of the different systems. And then there's people that aren't, and they have to learn it, which is why often they have to have a coach or they will seek out a coach, because they're curious to learn how they can be better. So I think it's two, and we can be at different stages at different parts of our lives, depending on where we are, you know, how stressed we are, what's happening with the world, again, all the systems in play that might be happening.
Perfect. And what piques your curiosity today?
What is piquing my curiosity today? Everything.
Well, everything that we've talked about, I know for sure. Yeah, and getting that delivered before 10 o'clock tonight so you can go through.
Yeah, but it's everything. It's like there's so many things going on in the world. I mean, as we are here on the 16th of January together, Davos is happening, and they're talking about the 10 greatest risks that that are going to impact the planet. We've got AI. How are they going to solve those risks? How are they going to enable us to live in a habitable planet in, you know, the next 20 years? How are we going to grow and collaborate more as a species? How are we not able to be so greedy? So you know, the rest of the world can live in a more sustainable way. I'm curious about everything, and there's just not enough time to deal with.
Oh, I know. I can tell. Phenomenal. I feel the same way. There's not enough time. So that's amazing. Thank you. I hope you get to make the time to follow what it is you want to pursue and not be caught in things you have to do all so much. Right?
Thank you. Yeah. That's great. I'm going to carry that with me. Yeah. Thank you.
You're very welcome. And thank you for being here and being my guest today. And thank you to my audience, as usual, for being here. If you like what you heard, please go and seek out. We'll put in the show notes where Caroline, the name of Caroline's book, and where you can find it, and her website. And if you like what you heard, please feel free to leave a review. And thank you again. And remember to stay connected and be remembered. Thanks for joining us. If today's show inspired you to make a new connection, why not start with me? Head over to LinkedIn and connect with me. Be sure to let me know you are a podcast listener, because I select one listener each month who connects with me on LinkedIn for a complimentary profile audit. And you know I love to meet new people, so I hope you take me up on it. Don't forget to stay connected and be remembered.